Good morning, everyone. It's time to read the messenger again. We are reading to you from our studio located at Friendship Haven in Fort Dodge. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone, and it is Sunday, February 16th, 2020. Glad to have you listening as always. Let's start by taking a look at today's headlines and the weather forecast. Adeline's Law is the title of one article from the front page of the paper. Stage Forward is a second article from the front page. 13 Fields Under One Roof is the title of a third article from the front page of the paper. And To Understand the Past Helps Us Better Appreciate What We Have is the title of the fourth article on the front page of today's messenger. Currently in Fort Dodge, it's 25 degrees. It feels like 19. There's a 50% chance of light snow today. May expect mostly cloudy skies and a southeast wind of 5 to 10 miles per hour. Looking for a high of 35 degrees, followed by a low tonight of 30. Adeline Milham hears the subtle sounds that nobody else picks up on, the IV drip in a hospital or water running outside, for example. But for one of the things her mother wants the 7-year-old to hear is her voice in a world where her needs often go unseen. Amanda Milham of Callander, a mom of four, never imagined herself as an advocate, let alone one for something like larger changing tables. But as a mother to a girl with special needs, she said being a voice for the unpleasant realities of disability exclusion is one of the easiest things she has done. Milham first started noticing that the public changing tables were too small for her daughter, who has autism, epilepsy, a tissue disorder, and two rare chromosome deletions when she was about four. Adeline would grip it because she was scared, she said. In addition to her other conditions, Adeline has a severe anxiety disorder, exacerbating something like being changed in less private places. But as she got older, a blanket on the dirty floor of a restroom, grassy lawns at the park, or the back of a car in a public area were her mom's only options. She knows the difference, Milham said. She's becoming aware of her surroundings. After a lot of dirty looks from judgmental passers-by, Milham doesn't let it get to her. It's for only her child's sake. If someone looks at her differently, that's my time to advocate for her, the head coordinator of Changing Spaces Iowa said. So she's doing just that. The legislative session, the Changing Tables Bill, introduced by State Representative Ann Meyer, Republican of Fort Dodge, and State Representative Kristen Sundy, a Democrat from West Des Moines, would require all state rest stops to install changing tables with a weight capacity for larger children, and adults. Meyer said that the bill, one of the first ones she's introduced this year, made it through committee with unanimous support and awaits the House funnel, the legislature's first deadline for getting bills approved by committees. It's something that lots of people have never thought of before, Meyer said, praising Milham for the awareness she's brought to this issue. I'm so glad it was brought to my attention and we can actually do something to address it and increase awareness. It's Adeline's dignity and her privacy, Milham said. I can't imagine what it's like for people with 30-year-olds who need this change as well. With her advocacy, the mom of four said many others have reached out to her with the same difficulties. A lot of people don't even know there's something out there to help them. And that's sad, she said. Everywhere we go is handicap accessible, but it's not fully accessible for the disabled community. In addition to advocating for larger changing tables, Milham is advocating for the changes in family restrooms that can afford more privacy to caretakers taking care of someone of the opposite sex. The changing table bill's first iteration is just the start for her. Since the law being proposed now would be for the rest stops only, there are only 38 in the state, according to the Department of Transportation. Milham would like to see the requirements expanded to facilities with the capacity to serve 1,500 or more people in a day, including public venues with a floor space of 40,000 square feet or more, public transportation facilities, galleries, libraries, parks and recreation centers, building and facilities with future construction dates, buildings and facilities undergoing future renovations. In other words, the places that families like theirs love to visit. A fiscal note from the Legislative Services Agency on the current bill iteration notes that renovating the state's 19 modern rest areas with larger changing tables would cost about $20,000 to $25,000 each from the primary road fund. When Millen brought this to us, I brainstormed with staff and legislators on how we can make this more successful. Meyer said, bringing the bill to its current iteration that gained bipartisan committee support. Meyer said she doesn't anticipate any opposition in the legislature after the funnel on the changes tables bill, but did foresee some difficulty with the expansions. We think this is a good first step, she said, noting that the caveat of mandating that private businesses install them would make wider bipartisan passage much more difficult. But Meyer also believes that the bill could accomplish much more beyond the rest stops. I truly believe this is a matter of awareness, she said, telling the Messenger that once people and businesses are more aware of this issue, they will voluntarily step up to install the new equipment in their own private businesses and facilities. To Millen, awareness is more than a progressive buzzword. It's her daughter's future. The director of development for Facing Autism said she won't stop until it's heard. Our lives are so much easier to live, and hers is so much more complex, she said, welling up as she described what it means to have her daughter's voice heard. For her to live in our world is hard, so if there is one thing that I can make easier for her, I'm going to advocate for it. Adeline Millen picks up on the little things that make her family slow down to look at the world around them, so her mother is returning the favor. Back to page one. Stage Forward is the title of the next article. When the former Phelps Middle School was converted into apartments, a few things that were left out for the tenants, When the former Phelps Middle School was converted into apartments, a few things were left out for the tenants. There's even a room to bathe their dogs. The conversion into apartments was completed in early 2019, about 5 years after its owners began the remodel. The one space that was left alone just as they found it when they began work is the old auditorium. It's all there, seats, curtains, lights, the knobs on the railings to keep students from sliding on them, the thick ropes tied to pegs that held up banks of lights and scenery, beautiful light fixtures in the ceiling, and a piano or two. The ghosts of stage fright and forgotten Christmas play lines linger. On Thursday, the public is invited by the Fort Dodge Fine Arts Association to come view the auditorium and learn about their plans to restore and renovate the space. Shelley Botorf, FDFAA Executive Director, said the renovation will help meet a need identified in a survey the group conducted 18 months ago. We asked, what types of performance spaces do we need? The number one answer was an auditorium not affiliated with a school, she said. Number two was a live music venue. Number three was rehearsal space. Botorf is quick to stress that the auditorium spaces currently available are excellent venues. The problem is that they're usually in use. For example, a school's auditorium is frequently used for classes, the school's own theater program, or other events. An independent group that wants to put on a show there will only have a limited time to set up, rehearse, and prop. Often their rehearsals take place in smaller spaces. Working on a full-size stage would offer them the advantage of working in roughly the same size space. We don't want to take anything from any other venue, she said. We only want to fill a gap. The auditorium is considered a mid-sized venue. Botorf said there are 612 seats on the main floor. The balcony above would not be kept in use. Botorf said the project is a good partnership between the FDFAA and the developer and the community. We felt this would make a great partnership. She hopes the public will attend and see what it looks like now and then come visit when the renovations are complete. Come see the space, see where it is now. You don't have to be an art lover to appreciate that space. The cost of the renovation is $150,000, about. Donations will be accepted during the tour, which will also feature a silent auction of local artwork, music, refreshments. The doors open at 5:30, and the annual meeting begins at 6:15, which will highlight the group's accomplishments during 2019. Back to the front page. With more warehouse space available than ever, White Transfer and Storage has experienced recent growth, expansion, and is well positioned to serve its customers and in Fort Dodge and the surrounding areas for years to come. Ben Cremens, who oversees operations for the company, is proud of the most recent expansion. Over the past year, he said, we've expanded our Fort Dodge facility to meet the ever-changing needs of our customers. We've doubled the footprint of our Fort Dodge facility to 200,000 square feet, as well as leased an additional 30,000 square feet off-site. The company has a long and rich history in Fort Dodge. White Transfer and Storage has been in operation since 1901. We're proud to be one of Fort Dodge's oldest businesses. The business has been in the Crimmins family since 1969 when its former owner, Bob Croton, sold it to Leo and Genevieve Crimmins. Construction on what is now corporate headquarters west of Fort Dodge began in 1970. The company was one of the first Allied Van Line's original agents when it formed in 1928. That portion of the business became Crimmins Relocation Services in 2014. It still serves Fort Dodge and the area. Crimmins sees many economic benefits to Fort Dodge and the surrounding area. We take much of the responsibility of logistics, especially warehousing, off of our customers' plate, he said. This allows them to focus on their core business and product development. We're a regional company that supports lots of businesses. Having warehousing and logistics support is an important element to many companies' ability to expand or be attracted to locating their businesses in our area. White Transfer is well positioned to help with that. They literally cover a lot of ground. White Transfer and Storage owns and operates 750,000 square feet of commercial warehouse space divided between our five locations, Crimmins said. That's just over 13 football fields, including the end zones under roof. On average, we move 2,000 to 3,000 pallets across our docks a day and employ about 40 people. Our locations include Fort Dodge, Webster City, Algona, Forest City, and Clarion. Crimmins sees lots of opportunity for growth here in the future. As local industry continues to grow and thrive, we want to partner with the new and existing businesses to meet their warehousing and logistics needs. We see opportunities for continued partnerships with businesses in the Ag Park and other vendors that partner with Prestige Foods. We also pride ourselves on being able to meet the needs of our current business partners as they grow, expand, and evolve. Crimmins said there are several things that stand out that have made the company an ongoing success. White Transfer and Storage is a family-oriented business. He said, we are small enough to know our customers and families personally, but we are large enough to be able to provide customized services to our customers. From a service standpoint, we want to be thought of as a true partner in our customers' operations. We pride ourselves on anticipating what our people need and being creative to get things done. That means that, yes, that customer can reach him. Each of the companies we work with have our cell phone number and understand we want them to be able to get a hold of us at any time for anything they may need. The first telephone number issued to the company when phone service was first made available in Fort Dodge was 123. Back to the front page at 8:13 in the morning already. To understand the past is the title of the next article from the front page of the paper. When Sean Begall, age 9, a fourth grader at Butler Elementary School, began researching Crispus attucks as part of a class project, he found him to be particularly interesting. He was a black slave and became a sailor, Begall said. He might have had some facial hair and he looked a little on the heavier side. Begall, along with four other talented and gifted students in Don Richardson's class, were asked to report on someone who made an impact on African Americans, the civil rights movement, desegregation, or made a change in history for the betterment of African Americans. It's part of the school's efforts to celebrate Black History Month. Attucks' courage is something Begall admires. He was brave because he was trying to beat up the British soldier, Begall said. Attucks is known as the first person killed in the Boston Massacre in 1770. He was the first one to take a bullet, Begall said. Mason Zuspan, age 10, picked George Washington Carver for the project. He was born into slavery, and him, his sister, and his mom were kidnapped. He was a scientist and inventor. Damari Clark, age 9, and Jason Dollett, age 10, chose more modern figures. Clark researched Kobe Bryant, a famous basketball player who died tragically in a helicopter crash on January 26. They called him Black Mamba, Clark said. Dollett researched former U.S. President Barack Obama. He was the 44th president and the first African-American president. Reggie Peterson, age 10, picked another former U.S. president, John F. Kennedy. He helped a lot with the separation of blacks and whites and helped us live how we live today, Peterson said. Peterson said he was a strong leader. He supported everything that Martin Luther King Jr. did. He never gave up about what he believed in. Richardson explained that it was okay for Peterson to research JFK. As long as the person had an impact on African Americans, Richardson said. After the students are done researching, they will be asked to interview each other about what they learned. We are here today because of all the sacrifices African Americans made, Richardson said. To understand the past helps us better appreciate what we have. Page 2 is where we find from our file column, and featured would be the delivery of singing Valentines to the messenger. Shown in this picture are Gordon Kirsten, Martha Beggarly, Ryan Vogt, and Gina DeLuca wearing the big heart. The quartet had delivered 40 Valentines by 2:30 and were on their way to deliver more after stopping at the messenger, singing Let Me Call You Sweetheart and You Are My Sunshine. They were one of 8 groups sent out during the day to sing for more than 105 people. The music raised with the Valentines goes towards the music department at St. Edmunds High School. This week's messenger poll question, do you support amending the Iowa Constitution to declare there is no right to an abortion in the state? To render an answer, go to messengernews.net. Last week's question, are you concerned that Iowa might lose the first-in-the-nation status in the presidential nominating process? 37% said no, 37% said yes, 63% said no. Very short column of this date in history. Today is Sunday, February 16th, the 47th day of 2020. There are 319 days left in the year. On this date in 2001, the United States and Britain staged air strikes against radar stations and air defense command centers in Iraq. Today's thought for today comes from Barbara Tuchman, an American historian who lived from 1912 to 1989. Her thought reads, I am content to define history as the past events of which we have knowledge and refrain from worrying about those of which we have none, until that is some archaeologist digs them up. Page 3 is where we find the community calendar. From 8 to 12:30 today, you could enjoy pancakes at the Bethany Lutheran Church in Emmitsburg. They're accepting a free will donation. There's a baked potato bar at 11:30 at the Epworth United Methodist Church, also accepting a free will donation. Carryouts are available. The Manson Meridian Singers Sing On performance is at 2 o'clock today at the Kate Tobin Auditorium. Tickets are $10 for adults, $7 for students, and that is at the auditorium at the Manson Northwest Webster High School. Fort Dodge Area Symphony Symphonic Cinema is at the middle school beginning at 3 o'clock. Adult tickets are $10. Students get in for free. Do You Believe in Miracles with Tim Francis runs from 3 to 5:30 today at the St. Edmund Auditorium. And we have the normal AA groups that are listed almost every week. At 11:08 on Saturday, some of the outdoor warning sirens in Webster County were activated for an unknown reason, according to the Webster County Emergency Management Agency. In Webster County, the outdoor warning sirens are scheduled to be activated at noon on Saturdays using the WeatherWarn software for testing purposes. The county maintains a backup with the Whelan encoder for redundancy. According to officials, it's believed that the Whelan encoder malfunction activating the sirens. Not all sirens within the county were activated during the malfunction. The encoder is set to be sent back in to be checked. The WeatherWarn software did activate the sirens at noon as scheduled with no issues. The purpose of the sirens is to alert the public outside that a tornado warning has been issued. They are not created or intended to be heard within your home. Page 4 is where we find the Messenger editorial, Federal Budget Process Needs Improvement, is the title of the Messenger editorial. President Donald Trump has forwarded to Congress his proposed federal budget for the fiscal year that begins October 1. Deciding what our national government should spend and how those expenditures should be funded was set out in our Constitution as the job of Congress. In recent decades, however, each president's budget recommendations have been at the heart of the process. That document has become the focal point for congressional deliberation about budget policies and appropriations. Unfortunately, however, Congress doesn't handle these crucial duties very well. Adopting a budget and approving the appropriations bills needed to be to fund the government should be a top priority. Sadly, for decades, Congress has repeatedly failed to get these basic tasks accomplished before the start of the federal fiscal year. As a consequence, there have been numerous short-term funding measures, kicking the funding decisions down the road rather than making them by October 1st, the start of the fiscal year. Additionally, there have been shutdowns and in short-term funding lapses. In many of the last 20 years, Congress has never even managed to adopt a budget. United States Senator Joni Ernst has been a strong critic of the way budget and appropriations decisions have been handled by Congress. Since becoming a member of the Senate in 2015, the Iowa Republican has made a series of constructive suggestions that she contends would bring a more orderly process. Now, as Congress begins to consider Trump's budget plan, she has introduced the Make Sense Act. That title is shorthand for making Americans know about excessive spending through common sense efforts to notice and target shenanigans act. It is a package of practical reforms to the federal budget and appropriation processes that will create more transparency and accountability. It incorporates and adds to suggestions Ernst has put forward in earlier bills that haven't yet become law. There's really no way to sugarcoat it. Washington's budget process is broken, Ernst said of her legislation. The president submits his budget, the House tears it up, no pun intended, and fails to pass its own budget. Then Congress kicks the can down the road on funding the government before cramming through a budget-busting bill at the 11th hour. This dysfunctional process and lack of transparency allows wasteful spending to continue year after year. Here is some of what Ernst is proposing through this bill. An annual report listing every government-funded project that is $1 billion or more over budget at 5 years or more behind schedule. A requirement that every project supported with federal funds to include a price tag that is easily available to taxpayers. Elimination of the use-it-or-lose-it incentive in many growing government agencies feel at the end of the year by limiting an agency's spending in the last 2 months of the fiscal year to no more than average it spend per month during the preceding 10 months. No recess for Congress if it has not approved a budget by April 15th or passed all appropriation bills by August 1st. If that happens, Ernst wants lawmakers to stay at work in Washington and they get this important work finished. No pay for Congress if it fails to meet the statutory deadline for passing a budget resolution or fails to fund the government by October 1st. The Messenger applauds Ernst for introducing this measure. Business and other organizations are expected to develop budgets and make spending decisions in an orderly fashion. Failing to get the work done properly and on time just isn't acceptable elsewhere in our society. That same standard should be held true for Congress. Let's see here. Taking a look at the rest of the front section of the paper. And I'll save this page for later. And I'll save this page for later. And I'll set these pages aside. Looks like we pretty much have wrapped up the main part of the first section of the paper today. So I'm going to save that page for later as well. And we're going to go ahead and take a look at the lifestyle section as I quit talking to myself. Let's take a look at some birth announcements. Let's see. From Unity Point Health, Trinity Regional Medical Center, Jamie and Peter Buchan of Manson welcomed a boy on February 5th. Shelby and Brandon Kampf of Fort Dodge welcomed a boy on February 6th. Cassie Feltz of Fort Dodge welcomed a girl on February 10th. Mercedes and Dean Thompson of Livermore welcomed a girl on February 12th. From Iowa Specialty Hospital, Alana and Sam Jacobson welcomed a girl, Adelie Cheryl Jacobson, born February 4th. Emily and Andrew Burmeister of Eagle Grove welcomed a boy named Lane Everett Burmeister, born February 6th. Lucas Northrup and Heather Bailey of Garner welcomed a boy named Corbin Dean Northrup, born February 8th. And those are the recent announcements of arrivals at a couple of area hospitals. Carl L. King Municipal Band of Fort Dodge will open its 2020 indoor season on February 23rd. In the Fort Dodge Middle School Auditorium, concertgoers should note the change of location for this concert. There is no admission charge with these concerts being provided by the City of Fort Dodge. Gerald Jimerson is the conductor of the Carl King Band, with Dr. David Klee serving as the assistant conductor and Paul Bloomquist as the announcer. Carl King was born February 21, 1891, in Paintersville, Ohio. After his childhood in Canton, Ohio, he left at the age of 19 to travel for 9 years with several different circuses, conducted several of their bands, and reached the pinnacle of success as a conductor of the world-famous Barnum & Bailey Circus Band during the 1917 and 1918 seasons. He returned to Canton after his trooping days were done in November of 1918 to settle down with his wife Ruth and direct the local Grand Army of the Republic Band. In addition, King's only son, Carl Jr., was born November of 1919. This concert will be the band's annual tribute to former conductor Carl L. King in honor of his birthday. Conductor Jimerson has drawn music for this concert from several of the compositions published 100 years ago in 1920, when Carl King was a 29-year-old young man in his second year as conductor of the GAR band in Canton. In case of inclement weather, the concert may be canceled. Any announcement will be made on the band's website at www.carling.us, the band's Facebook page. The next performance for the Carl King Band then will be the annual Irish concert on March 15th, and that will be back in the Decker Auditorium on the campus of Iowa Central Community College in Fort Dodge. The Fort Dodge Noon Lions Club recognized the Reverend Alan Henderson as the Citizen of the Year for his service to the area first responders, police, fire, sheriff, Iowa State Patrol, and EMTs. Accepting the plaque and is his widow, Chris Henderson, and daughter, Candy Lovin. And that was recently awarded to the Henderson family. 8:27 in the morning. Fort Dodge Community Rec Center wants to remind you that there are 50 different fitness classes a week at the Rec's downtown and Iowa Central Community College locations, all taught by nationally certified trainers. The YW wants to remind you that the AA Women's Group meets at 7 o'clock on Mondays. Fort Dodge Federated Garden Club will meet at 1 o'clock Tuesday at the Lion's Den. Jeff Becker will present a program on garden pests. Jan Crass will give a short presentation on a toolkit for flower shows. Visitors are welcome. Webster and Hamilton County Conservation Boards are holding an island hike at Brushy Creek State Recreational Area on February 23rd at 2 o'clock. Hikers should meet at the South Boat Ramp. A short walk across the ice will land you at Taylor Island. Hike up and enjoy seldom-seen views of the lake. If there's enough snow, snowshoes will be available. Or you may bring your own, or you can just hike in the warm winter boots. Ice safety and the history of the lake and island will be discussed. For more information, call 543-8298. If ice conditions are not suitable, an alternative hike will be offered. Talked about the Fort Dodge Fine Arts annual meeting at 5:30 Thursday at the Phillips Middle School. Social time is 5:30 to 6:15, followed by a meeting at 6:15. Refreshments will be served and the meeting is open to the public. The Fort Dodge Public Library Winter Family Literacy Program has started. Families may pick up activity logs at the Children's Reference Desk to log reading minutes and fund family literacy activities. Children will receive small prizes each week that they can complete, and entry forms to win a large family prize as well. The Refresh Women's Conference is at 9:30 to 3:30 on February 29th at Lizard Creek Ranch and Event Center. The speaker and worship leader is Gwen Smith. The conference is sponsored by Fort Dodge Area Churches. Kendall Young Library reminds us that they'll be hosting the 11th Annual Family Game Night from 5:30 to 8 o'clock this coming Friday. Bring the whole family to spend quality time together, get moving, and have a blast. Families will be able to choose from a variety of board games and card games, or try out life-size versions of Candyland, Connect Four, and Jenga. Those attending may also bring their favorite board game and share the fun with others. Children 5th grade and under must be accompanied by adult or older family member. Taco bags and cookies will be served. Also at the Kendall Young Library, Movie for Adults will be at 6 o'clock Tuesday in the library meeting room. They are showing Harriet. Popcorn and beverages are provided. No registration is required. The Kendall Young Library will host Teen Lounge from 3:30 to 5:30 on Tuesday and Wednesday at the library for teens in 6th through 12th grades, where they may enjoy snacks, puzzles, and all sorts of fun stuff. You're listening to IRIS, the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. The the Messenger may be heard at daily at 8 o'clock and with a command repeat performance at 3 o'clock. If you have any questions about IRIS programming, you may call IRIS at 515-243-6833. Going to take a quick breath and a little drink, and then we'll look at today's very brief obituary page. And today's obituary page, from Humboldt, Robert Bob Thomas Newton II. Robert Bob Thomas Newton II, age 77, of Humboldt, died Monday, February 10th at Iowa Methodist Medical Center in Des Moines. Bob was born November 30th, 1942, in Long Beach, California, the son of Robert Thomas and Betty Wester Newton. He attended Humboldt schools, graduated from Humboldt High School and the School of Commerce in Omaha. He worked in sales for the family furniture business and later owned his own carpeting business in Fort Dodge before retiring from Flooring America in 2016. Bob enjoyed Civil War history, Elvis Presley, attending University of Iowa football games, and fishing with friends in Canada. He leaves behind his sister, Sandra Back, and his long-term friends in Humboldt and Fort Dodge. He is preceded in death by his parents and two brothers, Vern Newton and Alan Newton. Burial will be in Union Cemetery in Humboldt at a later date. Mason Linhart Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. From Forest City, Kent A. Ewing. Kent A. Ewing, 62, of Forest City, passed away Friday, February 14th at the Good Samaritan Society in Forest City. Services for Kent Ewing will be held at a later date. Ewing Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. John W. Swanson. John W. Swanson, 73, of Woodward, and formerly of Fort Dodge, died Wednesday, February 12th at the Unity Point Hospice Taylor House in Des Moines. A celebration of life service will be held at 2 o'clock Saturday, February 22nd at Trinity Lutheran Church in Boxholm with the Reverend Rod Meyer officiating. Military rites will be conducted by the Lorenz C. Show American Legion Post 211 of Woodward. Visitation is from 5 to 7 Friday, February 21st at Carson Stapp Funeral Home in Ogden. Burial will be at the Lawn Cemetery near Boxholm at a later date. Carson Stapp Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be left to Trinity Lutheran Church in Boxholm. And that is the extent of today's brief obituary page. Back to the lifestyle section. Let's go ahead and take a look at birthdays and anniversaries, if you'll pardon the rustling of the newspapers. Let's see. Charles and Patricia Echeverra. Charles and Patricia Echeverra, Fort Dodge, will celebrate their 30th wedding anniversary on Monday. They have 8 children between them, 18 grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren. They were married in St. Paul, Minnesota on February 17, 1990. Valentine Dino Hirachita. Valentine Dino Hirachita of Fort Dodge celebrated his 90th birthday on Friday. He was born on February 14, 1930 in Iowa and lived most of his life in Fort Dodge. He married Carmela Sotelo from Albert Lea, Minnesota. They moved to the Quad Cities in the 1950s and returned to Iowa in 1988. They were married for 50 years when his wife died in 2004. Jan Altemeyer. Jan Altemeyer of Fort Dodge will celebrate her 80th birthday with an open house from 2 to 4 on February 23rd at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church. Her family includes Janine and Brad Niemeyer, Tara and Mike Murphy. Sarah Altmaier and David Altmaier. She has two grandchildren. Her husband, Keith, is deceased. She was born February 27, 1940. She married Keith Altmaier on August 2, 1959. The couple moved to Fort Dodge in 1962. She taught elementary general music for 15 years, taught piano lessons for 65 years, and has played oboe in the Carl King Municipal Band for 30 years, playing oboe also in the Fort Dodge Area Symphony for 55 years, and has played piano for church since 1962, and started the bell choir at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in 1975. From Lehigh, Alice Fibiker Johnson. Alice Fibiker Johnson of Lehigh will celebrate her 90th birthday on Tuesday. Her family includes David Fibiker, Diane and Patrick McCalmont. She has six step-grandchildren, two granddaughters, three great-grandchildren, and many step-grandchildren. Her husband, Norman, is deceased. Alice Marie Schoon was born on February 18, 1930, on a farm near Rolfe. She was the owner and instructor of the Round Prairie Music Studio in Fort Dodge. She and her husband were known as the Johnson Duo and entertained through the years as many venues in the area. She was also a church pianist for a number of churches. She worked as a medical secretary for local physicians and as a bookkeeper in Fort Dodge business. She is a member of the Lehigh Christian Church, the Dayton Dreamers Senior Club, where she served as an officer at one time. And I think I caught all the birthdays and anniversaries. A small bell dings, and a waitress dressed in all black comes gliding in through the door to pick up the plates of beef carpaccio with roasted garlic aioli and take them to the customers waiting in the dining room at Willow Ridge Restaurant. Back in the kitchen, the hustling and bustling doesn't skip a beat as the chefs in training start preparing the next course. Three nights a week, that's the scene in the kitchen at Willow Ridge Restaurant, northwest of Fort Dodge. The Iowa Central Community College Culinary Arts, Baking and Hospitality and Turf Management programs help maintain and run the college-owned golf course and restaurant. The restaurant is open Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. Willow Ridge was donated to the college by Don and Diane Decker in 2011, but the college has been using it since 2007. Culinary instructors Chef Michael Hurst and Jeffrey Phillipson lead the students in the kitchen. "This is the best experience you can get," Hurst said of the hands-on class. "It's one credit class that requires 60 hours of hands-on experience at the restaurant. Currently, there are 16 culinary students, 6 baking students, and 8 hospitality students in the class. The students are divided into 3 teams, which rotate service days each week. The teams are not only required to work one night a week, but some go above and beyond. Some of the kids are brilliant. Some of them will come out work Wednesday, Thursday, Friday every week because they realize this is the best experience and education they can get. The more experience you get here, the better." The restaurant is open to the public through reservations, though reservations are appreciated by the staff, they are not necessarily required. Hurst encourages members of the community to come out to Willow Ridge to see the work that the students put in there and enjoy the menus, many of which include dishes that are not commonly found in Fort Dodge area restaurants. "They'll produce amazing food," he said. "Maybe I'm biased, but I've not eaten better food in the 13 years I've been in Iowa than here. I can go down to Des Moines and spend $120 on a dinner for two, and I've had better in my own student restaurant." The 5-course meal is $25 per person, includes a bread course and a dessert course. In the fall semester, the class works on the menus that rotate every 2 weeks. "We want to give them a bit of repetition because our job is a lot of repetition when we prep. Some restaurants don't change their menu for a whole year. We've got to show them as many different skill sets with food as possible." The students will work on pan roasting, searing, baking, braising, stewing, and more. "We're ticking all the boxes of the types of cooking skills we want them to have and know," Hurst said. "When Hurst and Phillipson are writing the menus, they include seasonal produce whenever they can and try to expose the students to ingredients they probably never used before. In the spring semester, the class has a weekly rotating menus featuring class featuring different national and regional cuisines each week, often exposing the community to dishes they've never had the chance to try before. In the back of the kitchen on a recent night at the restaurant, Robert Linchenko, a sophomore, carefully laid out thinly pieces of beef that are just barely brown on the edges. He's preparing beef carpaccio, an Italian appetizer made with raw meat. Later, a customer will comment that they thought the carpaccio was a little too rare, not realizing that it was meant to be served that way. Linchenko said that while he now loves the culinary arts program at Iowa Central, he initially wasn't sure what he wanted to do when he started school. I really got into this, he said. I've never really liked school my whole life. Once I saw how great this program was, I just fell in love with it. For now, he is working on the cold side of the kitchen, away from the stoves and ovens, but mostly enjoys working with the various meats in the restaurant prepares. I just really like putting it on a hot pan and basting it with butter and turning it over and seeing the perfect sear, he said. That's my favorite for now. I'm doing the cold side. The class really pushes Linchenko said. It really tests you. There's a lot of challenging things, he said. For example, when it gets really busy and he calls out a lot of orders, it gets really hot and you get sweaty and you just got to push and get those orders done perfectly. Students have been enjoying the hands-on experience they get at Willow Ridge. I think it's awesome. I love it, said Camila Brindley, a baking student. It's good to have experience in the industry. It's so much better than just sitting in a classroom. You're actually on your feet getting experience. Brindley said that while she enjoys making nearly all the desserts at the Willow Ridge restaurant, there have been some challenges. Cream brulee was really hard for me. I got burned a few times on that one. Hearst is proud of the work his students produce at Willow Ridge. I'm blown away by what they can do. Isabel Bidwell, a sophomore, completed the culinary arts training last school year and is working on the hospitality program this school year. It's just so much fun, she said to the restaurant class. I absolutely love it up here. She said being able to interact with the customers and talk to them about the food and explain the dishes has been huge for her. This is not a money-making exercise, Hearst emphasized. It's more about these guys getting experience. It's about giving our kids stuff to do so they get the practice. The rest of the menus for the semester are set, including Spanish seafood paella. Oh, boy. Greek something or other. Sorry, I'm not even going to try and read that one. Thai coconut, green curry, African camo koftas, Chinese five-spice duck, Mexican ceviche, and more. The Greek dish that they're trying to serve, or they're going to serve, has like 22 letters in the name, and I'm just not going to do that one justice, but it sounds good, so let's go with that. Okay, taking a look, thumbing through the rest of the lifestyle section, it looks like we covered everything. So at 8:43 in the morning, we're going to flip over to the sports section. Good day for Iowa State fans as Iowa State beat Texas in basketball by a score of 81-52. Auto racing season resumes today as the Daytona 500 is expected to be up for grabs, and that starts this afternoon. District wrestling was held around the state, including in venues like Fort Dodge Senior High Gym. Fort Dodge has advanced 11 wrestlers to the state tournament this coming week, and they have 7 district champs and 4 runners-up as they head to the Wells Fargo Arena. Everyone on the Fort Dodge wrestling team has a different story to tell and a different path to success. In a Class 3A district meet here Saturday, 11 Dodgers came together to punch state tickets, making head coach Bobby Thompson's squad a state title contender once again. 7 Dodgers claimed district titles and 4 others advanced to state as runners-up. From inside the Fort Dodge Senior High Gym, Max Bishop at 106, Drake Ayala, who is the 120 wrestler, number 6, Brooks Cowell at 132, second-ranked Drayson Phillips at 138, 8th-ranked Brandon Mills at 145, Cody Cook at 152, and 7th-ranked Levi Agley at 195, all earned district titles. 7th-ranked Lane Cowell at 113, second-ranked Carson Taylor at 126, freshman Tucker Peterson at 170, and 10th-ranked senior Austin Lee, all advanced at 182, advanced as silver medalists. The Dodgers had 278 points, distancing themselves from runner-up Spencer at 184 and Lamar's at 177. Thompson has watched his group take on some of the best in the Midwest has to offer and more, putting the program ahead of personal success. "We live by God first, family second, and wrestling third," Thompson said. "This whole team cares about each other. Everyone is watching matches when they're not competing, and they're looking out for each other. They bleed together, sweat together, and work for each other. It hurts deep when one of their brothers doesn't make it." Ayala Jr. has competed in two straight state finals and is a defending champion, made quick work of his opponents on Saturday, earning two technical falls. He won a semifinal in 224 and his 120-pound title in 2 minutes, outscoring his opponents by a score of 47-17. "It's awesome, a great opportunity for us all," said Ayala, the nation's second-ranked 120-pounder. "We only get this experience a few times, so we're excited." "I thought our intensity was very good," Thompson said. "I truly believe if we stay healthy, we can bring back a trophy, top three for the sixth straight season. The Dodgers will open the traditional state tournament on Thursday at 9 o'clock, then we'll compete in the state dual tournament on Wednesday at 11 o'clock inside Wells Fargo Arena against Waukee." Let's see, a lot of wrestling over the place. As far as basketball is concerned, the Iowa Central men couldn't quite put together a 40-minute game, falling to number 12 Nyack inside the Hodges Fieldhouse by a score of 81-75. After taking a 44-34 halftime advantage, the Tritons were outscored in the second half 47-31. The Tritons are next in action on Wednesday at Dakota County. The Iowa Central women's basketball team was unable to keep up with the high-scoring and top-ranked Nyack. Also inside Hodges Fieldhouse on Saturday, they lost by 108-43 points. It was a close contest until the second half when the Trojans exploded for 73 points. The Tritons trailed just 19-16 after the first quarter. The Tritons are also in action at Southeastern with their next and final home contest scheduled for Wednesday, February 26th versus Ellsworth. The Iowa Central softball team swept two games on Saturday. They downed Edid by a score of 14-10 and topped NOC Tonkawa 13-5 for the second straight day. Peyton Anderson and Parker Matthews each had four hits in the win over Enid, driving in a combined seven runs and scoring five times. They each hit a home run. Bray Jebin also went deep, as did Mackenzie Rosenboom. Both drove in two runs on two hits. The Tritons are 6-3 overall and head to Kansas next weekend to face Hutchinson on Saturday. Let's see here. The Titan wrestling team, South Central Calhoun has sent four wrestlers to the Class 1A district meet Saturday held in Mapleton, and all four punched tickets to the state tournament. Jordan Kamavong, Blake McAllister, Brian King all earned district titles, with Kevin King advancing as a runner-up. McAllister will be making his second trip in as many seasons to state after qualifying as a freshman. The number 660-pounder scored a pair of falls to improve to 44-3 in the year and 81-14 overall. Let's take a look at the hot corner next. On this date in 1961, Elgin Baylor of Los Angeles scored 57 points to lead the Lakers over the Detroit Pistons 129-106. In 1972, Wilt Chamberlain of the Los Angeles Lakers became the first NBA player to reach 30,000-point mark for his career during a 110-109 loss to Phoenix Suns. 1997, Jeff Gordon, at age 25, becomes the youngest winner of the Daytona 500 after Dale Earnhardt crashes 12 laps from the end to prolong his Daytona 500 jinx. 2005, the NHL becomes the first time a major pro sports league in North America loses an entire season to a labor dispute. In 2019, Campbell's Chris Clemens becomes the ninth player in Division I men's basketball to reach 3,000-point mark for his career. Clemens finished with a game-high 28 points and a 76-71 loss to Presbyterian. Men's college basketball begins at 11 o'clock today with games all the way through 8 o'clock tonight. Women's college basketball is on beginning at 11 o'clock today with games all the way through 4 o'clock. There's college wrestling on the Big Ten Network, including Purdue at Illinois and Michigan at Wisconsin. There's pro golf. The Daytona 500 auto racing begins at 1:30 on Fox. Pro hockey has games on NBC at 11:30 and 2:30 in St. Louis at Nashville tonight on the NBC Sports Network. Locally, statewide, Iowa's at Minnesota in basketball at noon, and that's on Fox Sports 1. Evansville is at Drake at 3 o'clock. In women's basketball, Iowa State is at TCU. That's at noon on Fox Sports North, and Wisconsin is at Iowa at 2 o'clock. In wrestling, the Tritons are at the regional tourney in Estherville, Iowa Central Tritons, and that begins at 10 o'clock. Let's see here. I'd like to read an article from the business section about the Tupperware lady. If you've lived around Fort Dodge for any length of time, you probably have run into LaVon Kaiser. LaVon Kaiser of Fort Dodge wanted a flexible career that would allow her to be there for her children as they grew up. And in 1958, her husband, Archie, found it for her. The job was selling Tupperware. During a party at her relative's place in Eagle Grove, Kaiser met a woman from Kanawha. That woman was a consultant for Tupperware, a company that sells food storage and preparation containers. She wanted me to do a party here in Fort Dodge, LaVon recalled, because my husband and I were already talking about what I was going to do. She asked if I was going to join, and my husband said yes, I would. I never said I would sell it, but he could see that the flexibility of the job would work in our family. 62 years later, Kaiser continues the wide assortment of the plastic products. She continues to sell them, I should say. She is a star manager for the 72-year-old company. The Iowa couple, had just moved back to Fort Dodge when she took the job. Prior to that, they were living in Green Cove Springs, Florida. Archie was serving the United States Navy at the time. He had done 1 4-year term in the Navy, and when he got out, we met. He was in World War II, and because of Korea, he got called back because he was in the reserves. Archie, a native of Lehigh, spent a total of 8.5 years in the Navy. While in Florida, Kaiser found work at a candy store. After the two found their way back to Fort Dodge, they married soon after. When we got married, we said we wanted to raise our own kids. We wanted something that was flexible and I could name my own hours. I could have school time with the kids and that kind of thing. Kaiser, a native of Webb, credits Tupperware for allowing her to be around her children when she needed to be. My kids used to say to their friends, "My mom doesn't work, she can be your mother," Kaiser recalled. Because they didn't consider that I worked, I could go and hold a Tupperware party at night and my husband would be at home. When I had daytime parties, my kids were in the school. After the military, Archie became a truck driver. He worked for M&JR Hakes for 17 years. He then went to work for Brazos. Tupperware helped keep the finances afloat. "We were able to put 4 of my kids through college without student loans, and that was one of our goals," Kaiser said. "And because Tupperware is a generous company, we traveled a lot. I traveled a lot more than I ever expected I would otherwise. We were able to take our kids with us sometimes when we went to conventions in Florida. My kids were at Disney World several times." Traveling also allowed quality time with Archie. "Tupperware took my husband and I for cruises and that sort of thing," Kaiser said. "That was a fun thing we never would have had otherwise." Archie passed away about 20 years ago. "Archie and I were married for 48.5 years when he passed away," Kaiser said, "and I miss him every day." Kaiser remembers her husband as a person who noticed things others didn't, and would always look to help someone. He could talk about any subject. He was a very observant guy. He would be going down the road, and he would say, "I always have to watch this corner because there's an old farmer that pulls out in front of me, or someone painted their house." It wasn't something that was in my DNA, but he was very observant. He was a guy who helped everybody, whether it was kids or who needed their bicycle fixed. I know as a truck driver, he spent a lot of time helping motorists who were in trouble. Nowadays, he wouldn't get away with that because there are computers in the trucks and they know how many hours they are spending. In terms of Tupperware, the type of products has evolved quite a bit in 6 decades. It originally started out as bowls and serving bowls, Kaiser said. Then it went to storage, and that's what we are really known for, it's cupboard storage. The sizes are wide-ranging. They're all sizes of storage containers for storing cereals or chips, coffee, flour, sugar. And then they went to utensils. We have cookware and microwavable pieces. Kaiser said the microwavable pieces have become popular as everyone lives fast now and is in a hurry. She can sell the Tupperware anywhere. I don't have a territory, Kaiser said. We can sell anywhere. In fact, I have people in my unit who live in Arkansas, Nebraska, South Dakota. Most of those people who originated in Fort Dodge have moved away, but still want to stay in the business. As Kaiser's children grew older and moved out on their own, Tupperware became a way for her to make friends. I stayed in it during the time we raised our kids, Kaiser said. I stayed in it because I wanted to be home with them. And then after they were grown, I stayed in to put them through college. I tell my kids now that Tupperware is my social life. Kaiser's adult children have each moved away from the area. Deborah Santee lives in Sioux City. Christine Kaiser-Fanick lives in San Antonio, Texas. Angela Kaiser is in Snowflake, Arizona. Kevin Kaiser lives in Iowa City. Lisa Vega lives in Columbus, Ohio. Kaiser will hold Tupperware parties to demonstrate the products. Sometimes we do cooking, microwave cooking, or make candy. Sometimes people just want to see one particular phase of the product, and therefore you adapt to whatever their interest is. We do have Tupperware toys that have been very popular. And when I do vendor fairs, I always have to have a Shape-A-Ball. That's the toy we have never taken out of the line. People often recognize Kaiser when they see her. I've made so many friends, she said, I can go around and they know me by name because I'm the Tupperware lady. Kaiser will be selling Tupperware at the Messenger's Home Garden Lifestyle Show in March at the Iowa Central East Campus. Air Choice One, headquartered in St. Louis, has announced the launch of a newly revitalized website with updated ease of use, including especially in regards to booking. Along with the website, the company announced the release of its new rewards program, Choice Plus. Choice Plus is a frequent flyer rewards program that allows passengers to earn points every time they fly. Points earned can be redeemed for discounted or free flights. Each dollar is toward a flight is worth 1 point, and each point is worth 10 cents upon redemption. Air Choice One is very excited about these new changes and additions to the refreshed company website, said Darnia Wood, CFO of Air Choice One. Through the introduction of Air Choice Plus, and our other advancements, we believe that this will bring convenience to our customers throughout the booking process and continue to provide quality and exceptional travel experience. The airline selected a website development provider to help enable their growth via the integrated API with the Amelia RES system that is utilized for ease of booking. Air Choice One's partnership with Choice Travel Agency made accessible by the travel agency link on the top right of the homepage makes the website a one-stop shop for all your travel needs, regardless of the origin or destination, according to the press release. Among other cities, Air Choice One does serve Fort Dodge. Fort Dodge native Eddie Doyle has joined Central Financial Planning Group as an independent agent. He will be working out of the Fort Dodge office. He was previously living in Jacksonville, Florida, working at Bankers Life. His first career was in the golf business as manager of the Fort Dodge Country Club. He attended Kirkwood University and University of Tampa and will be graduating from BVU in business management in May. He has his life and health insurance licenses and plans to get a securities license and pursue a career as a financial advisor. Doyle graduated from St. Edmund High School in 2014 and was a 4-year letter winner and 2-year All-State golfer. Time to get to the forecast as this hour just flies by every week. Mostly cloudy today, high of 35, low tonight of 30, southeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Rain and snow mix on Monday. The temperature won't be too bad, a high of 38, low around 13. Colder Tuesday and Wednesday, mostly sunny Tuesday, high of 21, low around 1. Partly sunny Wednesday, high of 15, low around 0. Warming up on Thursday, sunny, high of 27, low of 15. Mostly sunny on Friday, high of 41, low around 23. Get out the suntan oil. On Saturday, mostly sunny, high of 43 degrees, low of 25. Yesterday's high was 36, previous night's low was 15. A year ago, we had a high of 26 and a low of minus 4. No precipitation in the area as of 4 o'clock yesterday. 4/10 of inch of a precipitation month to date. 2 inches of precipitation year to date. The sun will bid us farewell to this side of the planet at 5:48 tonight. And good Lord willing, will reappear tomorrow at 7:12 a.m. That brings us to the end of the reading of today's Fort Dodge Messenger. All material heard on Iris is intended solely for the use of the blind and print handicap. Again, if you have questions about Iris, call 515-243-6833. We thank the folks at Friendship Haven for giving Iris a wonderful home for Fort Dodge for so many years. And we thank you for listening to Iris. You folks have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Sunday. Bye-bye.